Today on Radio Labyrinth, our guest is a hunter and wildlife conservationist. She's the owner of a sporting goods store and training center. She teaches wildlife conservation. She is the Northeast Regional Director for Hunters Sharing the Harvest and was most recently a contestant on season 8 of the History Channel show Alone. She is also from Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, a town about 12 miles from where Jeff and I grew up in Mansfield, Pennsylvania, though he was born in Wellsboro and I was born in Elmira, New York. Jeff wanted me to give a shout out to Soldiers and Sailors. Please welcome Rosanna Moore to Radio Labyrinth Presents. Hello.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on with us. Jeff has been into the show since it started. I got into it 2 months ago exactly. After my son Gilbert was born, I needed a new show to watch and I just binged all of it and finally am caught up. So I'm enjoying it.
That is a lot of survival show in a short amount of time.
It's awesome for us to talk to somebody from really our neck of the woods, especially a town we used to go hang out in. And, you know, we had the sports rivalries and all that. And it's cool to see on TV, oh, Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. Wow, we got to go. We got to talk to her. We got to find out.
Well, I just wondered how many times you thought of pudgies while you're out there, because I've been gone from Mansfield for 20 years, but I still want pudgies all the time.
Isn't it so funny the things you think of from home? Yeah, pudgies is not one of those with home, but that's really funny.
How about the Wellsboro Diner?
The Wellsboro Diner, that's, yeah, historic for sure. It's a great place.
But are you originally from Tioga County? Did you grow up there? I know not Wellsboro, but are you born and raised in Tioga County?
Yeah, so I was, Lossburg is where I was until I was 12. And then I moved to Wellsboro. So Wellsboro.
Now, why did I saw Tioga someplace. So somebody has your bio wrong.
Yeah, no, just maybe they meant Tioga County. No, I'm from Wellsboro. Wellsboro is home. Bounced around a lot when I was a kid, but this has really just been home base for me. It's really the only place that I've ever felt like home, you know.
Do you remember a gym teacher by the name of Mr. Hauser?
Mr. Hauser, yes, I do.
Yeah.
So funny.
That's cool. Bob Hauser, he was engaged to my mother long, long time ago. Yep. I always thought he was the mean gym teacher. He was our substitute gym teacher sometime in Mansfield. And he was like, I do all these calisthenics, but you're no fun. We usually play with the parachute and the balls.
Such a small world. It's funny to talk to you guys and you know the things I know. So.
Yeah, that is weird. Do you know the Tioga River? Is it still polluted? No, we can talk about the show. And I wanted, before we, you know, there's a lot of questions about Alone, but I also wanted to know, you do work with an old professor of ours, Gail Largy, who was a sociology professor. I had him for a couple classes. He was also, I had him for a phone polling people class. I always liked him. He was a real interesting speaker, and I didn't know that he'd become a film documentarian, and the most recent one, if you want to tell people what it is so we can give it a plug.
Yeah, he just he did a documentary about Nesmik, George Washington Sears, as he's, I guess, better known, conservationist. And I didn't know that he was doing it either. So I had seen some of his documentaries before. Mm-hmm. So when I was going away to the show, I didn't know that he was working on that. And I've studied Nesmik a lot prior to going. So when I came back, that was just a really cool surprise, because he was doing that documentary on George Washington Sears. And then our Laurel Festival. Do you guys remember the Laurel Festival?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The whole Laurel Festival theme this year was based on Nesmik as well. So when I came back, it just happened to be this coincidence that I got to go and do survival stuff, and the whole town was really celebrating Nesmik. So it was pretty fun.
Were they able to have the Laurel Festival this year with rides and everything?
Nope, they stopped the Fireman's Carnival a few years back. So the festival is now just the parade and, you know, all the celebration. Then they have all the stuff on the green. So we don't have the Fireman's Carnival here anymore.
Oh, see, I miss all that old stuff from childhood. Jeff, go ahead.
You know, if you want to get into the show questions, I want to ask if you felt like the editing of the show accurately represented your time out there.
This is where I'm torn in answering these questions, because I feel like I'm so grateful to the show for giving me such an amazing opportunity to really test myself. So I hate to say anything negative about the show. And I guess it's probably not terribly negative. So I'll answer it without trying to be, because I knew what I was in for going out there. So everything that happened, you know, with the restrictions and whatever, as we go, I knew that stuff was going to happen. I knew there was a great chance of, you know, it being heavily edited so that they can kind of steer it a direction. But I was very surprised at how little of what I did out there was shown. Yes.
Yeah. How much footage do you think they used versus how much is left? Do you think they could probably do an entire series on each and every one of the contestants that are out there?
Yeah, absolutely. We video all day long. So I think that I got caught up in surviving and forgot this is a television show. If you want more airtime, you have to do all of the interesting stuff. So I spent so much time. I had set 46 snares. There is nothing interesting about setting 46 snares. Obsessed with hunting. I would hunt for hours and hours fishing, and I would apologize to the camera all the time and say, sorry guys, I know I'm fishing again. I'd be like, sorry guys, I know I'm just hunting again. But that's the stuff that in your head you're like, you just revert back to survival, you know.
Well, I was gonna ask you if you were fishing, because I don't think they showed that at all, that you fished.
Fished a lot. Yes. I sat for hours and hours and hours fishing.
It's the first season. I noticed people were catching a lot less fish than they have in the past. You know, there was one season where people just dropped the hook in the water and they were pulling fish out. But there was some rule, I guess, that you couldn't use a trot line, or was it the gill net you couldn't set?
Both. So the gill net, there came a time that we would be able to use nets, but we couldn't use those until that set time. And I can't remember what that time was. I didn't hit that time. Mm-hmm. And then we also had that live bait ban, but I believe that there was a low number of fish. And then I think that we also had those, you know, our shorelines, where some of us had some really bad spots. Like I could walk quite a ways out there, way farther than I could throw, and it was just to my knees.
Oh, wow.
It was very, very shallow. So, and I kept thinking, and I was hoping that they would show that, because I actually have to send you guys a picture of, I did a shadow box of all of the flies that I tied, but I would wait every day. Yeah, I came back and it was like just a ton of stuff. Actually, Jim Baird gave me the idea, because Jim was there to help take care of me when I went into recovery. Mm-hmm. And so Jim, I had all my flies laid out, picking through my bag, and he was like taking pictures of them. He's like, this is super cool. He's like, I think that you should do something with these, because I've never seen so many flies that somebody tied out there. So every day I would get up and I'm like, how can I make a better sinker? And then I would, you know, I thought about this last night and this is what I came up with. So I had all those conversations with the camera and showed the camera, just sitting for hours tying flies. I would cut my hair, chunks of my to, like, you know, make flies.
That's very resourceful, using your hair, part of your clothing, things you find laying around. Do you find a lot of things? I know they see you can keep whatever you find, but what's out there? Trash or pieces of metal, things like that?
That was a very, very clean place. Mm-hmm. Take very good care of it. It's a beautiful place. And I mean, you have to love it because it's so clean. But for us, I was hoping I could find something. So I did find a soda can early on. So I did make some spinners with that. And then I found the beer can that was actually hanging in a tree. Wow. yeah, so that was just stuck on a limb in a tree. And that's how I found that.
I didn't want the bear getting his beer.
What prepared you to be able to use your hair or find a tin can and make spinners out of it, use your hair for flies? How in life did you acquire that skill?
I don't think that I acquired that until later in life. And I think that mostly because I've never been growing up, Pine Creek is huge fly fishing. Right. So sell a lot of flies at my shop, and I talk to a lot of, my shop is like my own personal classroom. The guys that hang out at my shop teach me so much stuff all the time. So it's been about 7 years since I first opened a sporting goods store. So I've learned about a lot about tying flies in that time. But prior to that, I was, you know, just running around in Pine Creek, and I would fish with corn, or I used to catch so much trout on corn.
Yeah.
So very simple in my methods when I was a kid. So that stuff all came later in life.
I caught more trout when I was a kid than I did as I became a teenager and got older. It was so frustrating. I used to just, my grandpa would say, throw the worm on there, Timmy, and let it go down the creek or the crick. And it would go down the creek and I'd catch a trout. And then as I got older, I didn't have the patience anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and I think you try to get more skilled at it and try to use more advanced things, and I think you make it harder.
Yeah. Just give me the roe, the salmon roe, the worms, and corn, and I'll catch all day long. But I was never really a good fisherman, but I'm interested to watch people fish. You know, I wasn't good at catching fish as I got older. It's still fun though to go fishing. I used to fish at the reservoir in Wellsboro. I want to keep it asking. I know people like around the country, where's Tioga County? But it's, you know, when are we going to have this chance again? Where's your favorite place to fish in that area?
I think it's Pine Creek.
Pine Creek.
Yeah, I love Pine Creek. I spend a lot of time kayaking, canoeing, fishing, just on the water.
You still see otters in Pine Creek?
Yes. There's a good population here now.
Good. All right. I'll stop asking questions about Tioga County. Jeff, go ahead.
In hindsight, do you think you would make any changes to your shelter?
My shelter actually was perfect. My shelter was exactly like I wanted it. And even in the fireside chat, we talked a little bit about my shelter, but they also cut that out. So when I built my shelter, so all you guys ever really got to see was like the doorway where my tarp was hanging down. But I think that people forget that early on, I built a door. I found nails and I built a door. And then I made like a shingle system on that door. So every night that was affixed to the front of my shelter. So I would tie that tarp shut, and then I would put the door over it. But I videoed the wind just whipping down off that lake and inside my shelter. So I built the frame, then I put my tarp. That was just to get me started. And then over that, I caught lodgepole pine. And I tried to make sure that they were all very straight so that they were very close together. And then I chinked the entire thing with moss. It took me days and days and days and so many hours to bring back all of that moss that I would just pull up. It was like a carpet on the floor, you know, of the forest. So I would bring it all back and I chinked the entire thing, every bit of it with moss. And then I finally did like a shingle system on the outside of that. So I would lay in my shelter with my camera and the wind would be blowing and you would not even see the tarp, the bottom layer, move. Wow. Like there was no wind getting to my tarp. So I actually was very, very happy with my shelter. I wanted a smaller shelter because, and I know you're going to ask about the fire, because I knew the fire was going to be an issue. So I wanted to conserve space. And we did have some restrictions. We were supposed to have smaller shelters this year. So.
Well, now why would that be? Just because for being uncomfortable?
No, I think that it was a regulation that was in place, just kind of like our restrictions. It was just something that was agreed to, you know, with the First Nations, people that were, whose land we were on, the Honeycutine.
So you don't cut down too many trees. Is that part of it?
Probably, I would guess. And I think, you know, we had some fire restrictions and, you know, there were certain things that I don't think that they've, you know, said a lot about, but.
So your shelter was warm enough without having any kind of fire inside?
So that was another thing that they didn't show a lot of. So I had that fire, small fire pit right outside my door. I gathered up all of the big rocks that I could find. And that was all of the big rocks I could find. All of the rest were the size of my hand or smaller. So bringing all of that back was exerting a lot of energy. Because I had such small rocks, my drop location, amazing rocks. I could have built the best fireplace, relocate to this new location. The biggest rocks I can find are the size of my hand. So that was going to take a long time. But prior to me going, the question had been posed to me, what are you going to do if you can't build a fire pit? Because if you go back through my social media, I do build a lot of fireplaces outside, and I build fire pits, and I love to, you know, just build different fire systems. So I'm skilled at that. But somebody said, what are you going to do if you can't do that when you get out there? And I thought, you know what, that's a very real possibility. So I researched living without a fire directly in my shelter. And ironically, I wasn't able to build one in my shelter. So I knew that I just needed to have that fire right outside my door. I was working on, I think you can see it in a couple of them, I had found a stove pipe up in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Big section of like pipe from like a chimney. And so I carried that back, and I had had that suspended on like a tripod where I was starting to build my fire pit right outside my door. But what I did was I heated those big rocks that I could find, and I brought in heated rocks every night to help keep me warm in my bed. So I knew just from research of, you know, other cultures that have lived without direct fire inside their shelters, that I could absolutely do that. And I had the proper clothing to do that. I was able to keep my core temperature high enough. And I was drinking warm liquids. All of my food was hot, and I had the hot stones. So I do think it was completely possible to live in that shelter without fire in the shelter.
Now, would you have changed any of the 10 items that you're allowed to bring with you? Would you have brought any, would you have changed any of them up in retrospect?
Yeah, I would have. I think I would have not taken my axe. I expended a lot of energy trying to swing the axe, so I ended up not using my saw. So I think I would have not taken the axe, and maybe, because I think really what it comes down to, hindsight, it comes down to, it becomes how long can you last? And maybe, you know, not for everybody. I mean, we see Clay. Clay is amazing. He is doing an amazing job out there. But for most people, it becomes a body weight challenge. You know, so I think if I would have not taken the axe and maybe taken rations, it would have, you know, get prolonged a little bit. But what it came down to for me wasn't really a body weight issue. It wasn't that I had lost too much weight. It was that my body stopped circulating blood to my feet. I had a circulation issue.
Due to hypothermia?
Nope. That actually was, and I didn't know until I got back and I lost circulation to my hands, but I had a pre-existing condition that we didn't know about.
Oh, wow.
So they think that now that I lose circulation to my fingers, I'll get a perfect line across my fingers. And I take pictures of it because it's really cool. It's like perfectly straight across my fingers, and the rest will turn pure white. Wow. Above the line. So then once I started losing circulation to my hands, kept saying to them when they decided to make that decision to pull me, kept saying, if I just knew what was wrong with my feet, there's no reason. My socks are dry. My boots are warm. They're perfect. Everything that I have should be fine. And I just couldn't figure out why. Well, that was why. So I have Raynaud's syndrome, I guess.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say Raynaud's syndrome.
Wow. Yeah. So my doctor said that it could be. So now I have to, you know, go to all of the rheumatologists. My doctor had mentioned that it could have just been, you know, that going through starvation, it could have just triggered it. But we go through extensive medical tests prior to going out there. So it was just not anything that I could have foreseen happening.
You mentioned the medical tests. So is there a lot of other stuff you have to go through?
Yeah, we go through a lot of testing. We have, you know, a lot of medical testing. We have EKGs. That's why when Tim went out, everybody keeps asking why Tim was cleared to go out. But, he, you know, he had his EKG, and we go through lots of physicals and stuff. So we do some, you know, psychiatric evaluations, background checks, of course. They don't want to put, you know, someone could be a serial killer out there. I suppose is probably their reasoning for that. And just to make sure that we're mentally sound, you know, that we're not going to have some large mental break out there. I mean, I think that we all mentally are compromised a little bit just in the fact that we are alone and we, you know, miss people. But I think, you know, they try to be very sure that we're not a depressive personality or something like that. So,
what a great show for to like kind of go along with, you know, lockdowns, you know, and for a lot of people who don't have any, so or haven't had any real social interaction. I mean, it's issue you can relate. I mean, granted, they have the comforts and they have Amazon and stuff like that, but still, you know, you're alone.
Yeah, I think that people have struggled with that. You see that now. You hear stories of that. You know, some people were so frightened by the entire COVID pandemic that they really became secluded from everybody else because they were just very scared about it. So, yeah, I think mentally that it probably is the same.
You said set a bunch of snares. I think we only ever saw you get one rabbit. Did you catch anything else?
Yeah, what else did you eat?
Yeah, I had another rabbit, but that was when they were extracting me. So the second rabbit, I took him back and cooked him up at recovery. I think they were a little concerned about me. They're like, we have lots of food for you. And they were like, are you sure you want to bring that back? And I'm like, yeah, I killed it. I can't not bring it back and utilize it. So me and Jim Barrett actually did. We cooked up that rabbit. We made some stew back at recovery. So
what happens when you get to recovery? I mean, you were there for what, like 4 or 5 days before you got to be interviewed by Nikki for the show, right?
I was there for 11 days.
11 days. Okay.
Yeah. So I was there for quite some time, but my feet were in pretty bad shape. So I actually froze the tops of my feet too. So I had like from sitting in the snow, you know, doing snares, I froze the top layer. Actually, it was really thick. The tops of my feet were so awful. So it took a little bit for me to get back to where they wanted me out and about. And then even when we got back, the grizzly bears were so bad, even at the lodge, that we had to be supervised. So, you know, It was a couple of days of recovery and then back out. I was, you know, just wandering around. I keep talking about Jim. Jim was, they bring somebody back that has already been through it to help you because they understand where you're coming from. So Jim was a big help. And, you know, I think I struggled a little bit there for a few days just because I didn't want to come out. So I cried a lot.
Right.
Was disappointed in what happened. He was a good buddy. He listened to me.
Were you a fan of his from the previous seasons of the show?
I had seen him, but yeah, I didn't really know a lot about him. But he ended up being a very big help to me.
What made you decide to try out for the show or to apply to get on the show?
I didn't apply to go on the show. I do a lot of conservation stuff. So I market myself on social media. I say market, I'm not even sure what I'm marketing for, but I just like to maybe inspire people. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, I'm planning a North American Super Slam as kind of an outline to teach everybody how important each of the large 29 North American animals are to the culture in which they exist. So I did a lot of that on social media, and a producer had seen me on Instagram and sent me an email.
Well, that's interesting. So they're actively searching for people who would be good matches for the show then.
I believe so. Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
I like that style of casting.
Do you think women have a harder time out there? Just, and you mentioned the body weight thing, like the difference in body weight between you and somebody like Biko is got to be 200 pounds maybe when you start. So you think it's inherently harder as a woman to compete on alone?
I think if you're gonna look at it from a body weight perspective, I think pound for pound, we are holding our own against the men. If you think about the amount of weight that we lose per the days that we're there, I think that we're right in the same exact place with them.
Yeah, and in the last couple of seasons, it's come down to the wire. Watching it comes down to the wire. Maybe even this time, we don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens because, I mean, we don't even know either, you know, what is going to happen. We're seeing it when you guys see it. So
I know how hungry people must be, but I don't know. I guess if I'm really, really hungry, I would eat a fish that was dead on the shore, but that's not generally a good idea to just find a fish.
I would have loved to have found a fish when I was out there because, I mean, you are eating. And it was cold.
Yeah, cold enough that it wouldn't be.
Yeah. If it were like when we first got there, ooh, that would have been questionable. It was very, very warm when we first got there. But, I mean, I ate ants and I ate a couple grasshoppers. So, I mean, you know, it's not that bad comparatively.
Did you cook them or did you eat them raw?
I just ate them. I did video eating the ants. Must be they didn't want to use that. I'm like, these have absolutely no flavor. Yeah. Like popping ants in my mouth.
And what do grasshoppers taste like?
I tried not to taste them. I just crunched them up and swallowed them. But I don't know what that taste is. It's not good.
Earthy rot. I don't know.
That's such a very good description.
Earthy rot. That's what crickets taste like. And I've eaten those, but
yeah, that's actually perfect.
But as we move along, where did you get your love for the outdoors?
So growing up here, I grew up in different places. So now my friends that come into my store, because I moved my shop from where I had originally opened my sporting goods store, I decided to come back home and rebrand and changed the shop. I didn't want just retail. I wanted to be able to train, wanted to teach kids. So I cut back my retail by like half. And then most of my shop is training center. So I spend most of my days teaching women and kids. And actually I do teach a lot of men to shoot bows. When I came back to the area, a lot of the people that I had grown up with, I hadn't seen in like 16 years, probably. That's about how long I had been gone. And so they were all very surprised to even know this side of me. And I think that comes from when I was a kid, I kept my entire life very quiet and nobody ever knew my life at home. So we grew up in, me and my sister grew up in, I was in a foster home and I also lived in a lot of safe houses. So we bounced around a lot. So when I was at our home in ASIF, I would go outside of my home because that's where I was most comfortable. Being home wasn't comfortable for me. Right. So I spent a lot of time in the mountains in ASIF, just running around doing whatever, fishing Pine Creek, just kind of, it was just what I grew up doing. And I tried to, because people always ask that question too, who taught you how to hunt? Was that your dad? Did your dad teach you that? And no, I didn't really have one of those very much growing up. So I kind of taught myself. So I, you know, teaching myself and being out there all the time, it was where I was happy. And so I try to figure that out now as an adult, why that is that I have that natural tendency to go that way. Is it because it was safe for me? It was comfortable for me as a kid? Or is it because it's just something that is in my genetic makeup? Is it just so I found my real father and he is very much a hunter and he was very much a trapper and I'm a lot like him. So then I wonder, is that just I am?
Yeah. Sounds genetic to me, but if it were genetic, I would know how to do it. And I don't.
What kind of stuff do you like to trap?
So I trap a variety of things. And the reason why I trap is more for conservation efforts and more to teach youth about conservation efforts, because a lot of the predators or nest raiders, we'll call them nest raiders, like raccoons and possums, they don't get hunted otherwise. You know, so there's not a lot of people. There are some fox hunters out there, but not a lot of them left, because you don't eat these animals necessarily. And you can eat fox, you can eat woodchuck, you can eat raccoon, possum, any of them, and they're all very good. We just, it's not something that we grew up being taught. So people do not hunt them because they don't really see that purpose. We're not going to eat them, but there still is that need to control the numbers. So that's really why I trap. So I trap a variety of animals.
Muskrat, do you get those? Is that still, or are they endangered up there?
Yep. We trap muskrats. Yep.
I had a cousin that did that. Yeah. And just to further that, I mean, my cousin, he teaches at Cowdersport and he hunts bear, he hunts coyote. He has a couple of them in his basement. He's really cool. And he's taught his young sons, well, they're like 10 now, I guess, almost 8 or 10, but he's taught them how to hunt and have an appreciation for it. So, I mean, at least some of us have, my brother and I don't know how to do it, but our cousin up there and our uncle is still up there. I don't know. Have you ever heard of a town called Millerton?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I still live in Millerton. I actually lived in Roseville for about 16 years.
Oh, Roseville. Okay.
That was great.
Yeah.
Our friend's parents ran the Roseville market, didn't they?
They reopened that.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. So that there's another store there now. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nobody in the world would know about market. So that's pretty cool.
Stop by the Roseville market and rent your VHS tapes. I would go out in the woods. And that's one of the things I do like about the show. My grandfather would take me out in the woods. I never went deer hunting, but he taught me how to hunt small game. So I was able to do that. So in my time, I got some rabbits, some grouse, some, squirrel, but I never got a ringneck. And of course my mother wouldn't let me deer hunt. So, and I don't know that I would have been able to do it anyway. I don't want to kill Bambi. I want to eat Bambi, but I don't want to kill Bambi.
Well, that's the great part about this area. And as I travel all over the world, and I tell everybody all the time, I'm like, every place I go to, I really appreciate that place for what it has to offer. But I tell them all the time, I'm like, you have to come to Pennsylvania. There's just this amazing place in the mountains that it's carpeted with green, and there's abundant wildlife, and it's clean and it's beautiful. And so you have a taste of that too. You may not be a hunter, but you understand the need for it, and you understand, it's a food source. And so even if you're not a hunter, you get to come here and you get to understand it, conservation, in a different way and have a different perspective. So
I've told people before that you haven't lived until you've walked to school past a hotel where there are 20 dead buck hanging in front of it.
That's right.
I know when I was a kid and we used to go to like the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon, we would see bear quite often when we were over. Have you hunted bear? Or I know you seemed kind of scared of the bears for a bit there.
So the grizzly bears are another thing that they didn't really show a lot of, but if you watch my fireside chat, you'll hear Nikki say, "You had so many bear," but they didn't show it. So right. Why did they put that part of Nikki asking me about so many bear, but they didn't show my bear? I guess I had probably about 8 grizzly bears. So I had a lot of grizzly bears. And so that particular grizzly bear had actually hunted me for about 3 hours. So that morning, he hunted me. So what his purpose for hunting me was, I mean, nobody will know that other than the grizzly bear. Right. So when people are like, oh, he wasn't going to hurt you. Everything I know with 100% certainty is nobody knows what that bear was going to do except for that bear, but he was hunting me for a reason. So I was talking to my camera and talking about my camera, like he's my friend, like we were going to go and get some pine boughs for my shelter. So I'm talking to the camera and I walk around my shelter and the grizzly bear is standing on the other side of my shelter. So I yell at the bear and he kind of hoofed at me, turned around, ran up kind of on the hill. And so I said to the camera, I don't think that I've seen the last of this bear, but we're going to stay right here to make sure that he's gone. And then I'm going to go and see, because I don't know where he came from. I didn't know if he came from up in the woods, if he smelled me, because he would have come down by my kitchen, or if he was just passing through, because I was kind of on a grizzly bear crossover and the grizzly bear trap. And I found remnants of a grizzly bear trap, like our trapper's cabin, some wooden crosses. That was a grizzly bear trap line that I set up my camp on. So there were a ton of grizzly bears. And I dealt with them as they came through. I had one breathing behind me. They could hear him on the video breathing behind me. And I just waited it out. And I'm like, so you see it, little clips of it when I'm like, I don't know what he's going to do, or, whatever, the little grizzly bear pieces. Those are all different grizzly bear that I had. So anyways, that grizzly bear, so I waited about 45 minutes in front of my shelter. And then I said to the camera, let's go out to the beach because there was snow. Let's see if he was just walking down the beach and if he was just crossing over. Because if I can track this bear, I can maybe better figure out what his motive was, And that's what I do with animals here. I teach tracking and you can tell a lot about an animal's tracks. So took the camera out to the beach. And I don't know if you guys had watched that very closely, but That bear actually was standing there watching me the entire time. On the other side of the tree, if you go back, you'll see the bear standing there watching me, and I don't see him. Well, he had was gone all the way up around down through my marsh, which I think people are calling a pond. It was just a swampy marsh. There was really not much water there, but he had gone down through there and he came out behind me. So he was very strategic in what he was doing. I scared him. He still didn't want to go. So he came down around, you know, behind me and watched me. And then when I scared him, when I was trying to back up, I pick up the camera and I'm trying to make myself bigger, but I had my gloves in my mouth, so it sounded muffled when I was talking, trying to get my backpack off to get my air horn and stuff out of it. And I'm backing up. He starts to go, but he comes back. Mm-hmm. He just kind of did this thing where he would just kind of pace. He'd go down, then he'd come back, and then he'd go down and come back. And he did that for probably, I don't know, maybe another hour, hour and a half. And then he went there, and then he went around the corner back into the marsh, and I would see him over there in the marsh. So over that time, I had that little meltdown where I was like, I just don't know what this bear is going to do. You know, like, he obviously is way more interested than any of the other grizzly bears I have had. So I just was unsure. That's not a situation that I have ever been in, to have a bear just kind of hunting me. He was hunting
me. Maybe he was a fan of the show.
Yeah, you wanted your autograph.
Get some more camera time. So it was a very long, drawn out process, and they have all of that footage, you know, but they just chose not to tell the story that way. So, you know, it is what they showed, and, you know.
Most people don't know what it's like to be hunted. So, I mean, you're.
Mm-mm. So, no, that had some lasting effects, you know. That was, so if it were just that, you know, the bears were outside my shelter, that was very normal. That's why Nikki said, you had so many grizzly bears, because I had so many all the time. There was constantly grizzly bears.
Yeah, so, I'd show up, and as soon as I saw a bear, I'd go, yeah, I'm out.
we used to see black bears all the time, and
they're smaller. I mean, they're what, one third the size maybe or less?
But they're different. Yeah, they're different. They're a totally different animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're different. So my first grizzly bear encounter was like 4 days into it. I had a mother and two cubs run at me. They also have the footage of that. But that one, I was like, I have to get off the beach. So I'm trying to get back off the beach. So they said the video was just terrible. It was super shaky. I stopped and I tried to zoom in from in the trees, but they're running, and they run like 36, 38 miles an hour. She put her nose up in the air and she was coming that way. Mm. So I was trying to get back off the beach. So, I mean, you have an animal that is 4 times the size of the black bears that I'm used to running around with up here. I mean, we see them all the time. I took on my Instagram, there's like me taking a selfie with a big boar that's nesting. So I'm just not, they're different. Grizzly bears are very smart. They were there for the salmon run, and the salmon did not run. These bears, that area, they associate that area with food, and they're going to eat there before they go into hibernation. Well, there was no food. So they're very unpredictable.
What happened to the salmon?
There was a landslide in the Fraser River that blocked the salmon run.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Something like that just messes up the entire ecosystem. They weren't able to lay their eggs.
Yeah, they were bringing some through. I'm not sure of all of their motives of how they were doing it. I think they were bringing some, like maybe using helicopters or something and trying to dig through there, but not nearly what should be coming through.
Yeah, so the bears were definitely, you were a big salmon.
Yeah.
Would you go back if they give you a second chance for another season later on?
To go back, yeah. Now that I know what my medical issues are, those are something that can be controlled. And I'm glad that I know now, because the show is just a little tiny piece of my story. I hunt all over the world, and I have a very big purpose outside of the show. So I've hunted Greenland, and it was negative 40 some degrees. So I need to know what this is, and I need to be able to manage it. And I'm my doctor is very confident that that won't be a big problem. That's not anything that's going, which I don't think anything would ever stop me from doing what I want to do. It's just who I am. But I now knowing what this is and that I can manage this, I would go back in a second. Every survival situation, well, I mean, every place that they put us out there, each of us had a different experience. So any place that they put you would be a new challenge.
And did you know going into it that it was going to be $500,000 prize if you made it?
Yeah, I think you forget about that, though. I don't think I ever thought about the money while I was out there. You're so focused on, well, I mean, maybe it was just me, but I was so focused. That's why I forgot to, you know, do some showy stuff and whatever. You just get so focused on surviving. It's a personal challenge, you know, like this is now my challenge and I'm going to accomplish this goal. In that you forget about.
You see some of the contestants similar to what you're talking about, focusing on what they have to do. And then you see others who are performers and, you know, everybody's different. So that's, you know, but you can go back and watch all the old episodes or the old seasons and you see that, like, this is me, this is my character, this is my thing. And a lot of those people don't make it very long, but it's still entertaining.
Oh yeah. It is on television. They need that.
Yeah. So,
I just probably should have focused a little bit more on that. I mean, like building a shelter. So people want to see us out there surviving. And so that's what I was doing. But then at the same time, I've gotten so many comments like, we loved Jordan's shelter. He built this amazing shelter. Well, it's not really survival. He built an amazing shelter. The place was so cool. And he is so good at that. But I needed to focus on, you know, a small space for the reasons that I stated. And that was, you know, so I was very regimented in everything that I did every day. I fished a certain amount of hours. I hunted a certain amount of hours. I snared a certain amount of hours. And I foraged a certain amount of hours. Like those were my things every single day that I did.
Before we wind down and everything, you want to tell us about hunters sharing the harvest?
I would love to. That's one of my favorite things. So I am the Northeast Regional Director, and I appreciate you letting me talk about this because this is a really amazing thing that we do here in Pennsylvania. They asked me to join the board. I think it was last year. It might actually have been the year before because I feel like I've missed time now because I was out there. But they asked me to join the board, but I have been a coordinator for the program for about 5 years. So what I would do is I would just, if people wanted to donate, or I would educate them about the program, but now I get to do a little bit more. I think there are 8 board members. So what we do is we gather venison donations from hunters, and we drop those off at local food pantries. So last year, we had, I think, almost 5,000 deer donated to local food pantries all across Pennsylvania.
And when did they start allowing that? Because that's amazing that they allow game to be delivered.
Early 90s.
Well, that's a lot sooner than I thought it would have been, but that's great.
It's really amazing. We feed tons of families. And this year, it's more important now than it's ever been because we have so many families that are in need right now after the COVID crisis and the loss of, you know, employment or just tough times for families. So this year will be a really big year for us. And we'll be doing a lot of advertising and really trying to get the generosity of hunters is just amazing anyways. I mean, they're always so generous with their venison donations. We get DMAP tags, so we get extra doe tags, and they'll go out and harvest a deer. I work with programs for youth, Cameron County Outdoor Youth Association. They're an amazing association. They bring youth hunters in, and they're allowed to harvest, I think, 2 deer. 1 deer has to go to the Hunter Sharing Harvest Program.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a really great program.
Now, these archery, it could be any season, archery, muzzleloader.
Yep. Any season.
That's great. Do they have a website where people can find out more about them?
Yes. It's called sharedeer.org.
Awesome. And do you want to plug the name of your store and where people can find you on social media?
I would love to. So the name of my shop is Moore's Sports Center. And that's because that's my last name. And then I do have a Facebook page for the shop. But you can follow more of my conservation efforts at Rosanna Moore. And my hashtag is This Is My Quest.
Awesome. Before we finally wrap, we have some questions we ask everybody that we have on the show. Hopefully you don't mind indulging us. They're fun. Nothing crazy.
All right.
Go ahead, Jeff. Wait a minute, Jeff. I don't want to step on you if you had more questions you want to ask.
No, I want to say, you know, a lot of people really talked about how great you looked after so much time out there, and your hair looked amazing, even after being in the woods that long. And they said, I'm going to stop showering now for 45 days or whatever it is, if it makes your hair look that good.
So I brushed my hair with trapping snare wire. So I just did a video to show my comb I made. I made a brush with snare wire, and I don't even know why people think my hair was so matted. I washed it with just like a primitive soap wash. So I took ashes from my fire and I would soak them in water, and it makes an acidic, like a homemade lye. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would wash up with and wash my, kind of wipe my hair down with, because that was the only thing that I could come up with out there. So I actually chopped it off because it was in such bad shape when I came out. So when people were like saying all that stuff, I was like, wow. Funny.
I don't know that would happen to me. I could tell you that I would be lazy.
Yeah. So we call this Radio Labyrinth Presents Final Questions.
Okay.
And it's basically like your last day on Earth.
Okay.
And you get to pick one last dessert. What would you pick?
One last dessert. Oh my, probably cheesecake.
Cheesecake's been a pretty popular answer.
Yep. Cheesecake, yeah. What, you have one last movie to watch. What will it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't really watch television. I know, and it's funny because I ended up on the television, but I don't watch TV.
Yeah, that's the final question. If you want to, what the final song you'd listen to would be?
Oh my gosh, these are tough ones. I feel like I am so boring. I don't watch TV, and I actually listen to really, not really old country, but older country. So I would probably pick a Dolly Parton song or something.
That wouldn't be a bad thing to go out to, listening to her old stuff, which is fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we love the fact that somebody from the TC is bringing notoriety to the state and to the county. And have you had people come into the shop just because you were on the show that aren't from that area?
Yep, I have people every day come to visit me that you know, have a cabin here or just passing through, or going to be coming, you know, somewhere close by. They'll veer off and come over to the shop. So I'm meeting all kinds of new people, and that's why I say I'm so grateful for the show, even though they didn't get to tell my whole story and, you know, all the cool things that I wanted to talk about, the bear trap and the story of that. I'm so grateful for just getting to meet. I am a people person. I love people. I value people for who they are and what they have to offer. So getting to meet all of these amazing people that are following my journey, mm-hmm. It's awesome. And it's really cool to meet you guys too. It's so funny that you called it the TC.
I don't know that I ever have in my life before, but
that was good.
Do you have a favorite that you're rooting for the rest of the season?
Oh, Jeff.
Oh, that's a toughie. You get so close to everyone out there for a different reason. And we spent more time out there than what any season had before, because we had 2 weeks of quarantine,
right,
and 2 weeks of orientation. So they're really all my friends, and they are all amazingly skilled. And I really like them all for different reasons, so that would be very hard for me to choose.
So you'll be happy no matter who wins.
Absolutely, yes. I'm proud of all of them. Yeah.
You can watch Alone on the History Channel. It is on every week Thursday nights, and you can also watch all the old seasons on your streaming services. I believe you can watch it on Netflix, or you can watch it on demand as well, no matter what cable you have.
I think all seasons are on Hulu, and the most recent season 7 is on Netflix.
Right. And get caught up. It's a great show. Start with the most recent season, or you can go back and binge from the beginning. And if you're already watching it, we hope you enjoyed our time with our guest tonight, who is very fabulous, from the TC. And smart, doesn't like to eat pudgies. I just have the shirt because it's fun to wear a shirt in an area where people don't know what's that.
That is so funny. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's really been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Try again.